Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When 54-year-old Connie Rednest and 58-year-old Ernie Evans were found dead under a bridge in Rapid City last week, they had presumably died of hypothermia. A community mourned. But it's a community occasionally divided by the ongoing challenge of homelessness and, furthermore, by elusive solutions. As temperatures drop, some members of the Rapid City community have worked to provide warming centers for people with no place to go. Rapid City Police Chief Carl Jegeris spoke out against that practice, pointing out that the so-called pop-up shelters contribute to the problem instead of helping to alleviate it. For more on the topic, we're joined by Chief Jegeris now on the phone from Rapid City. Chief, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Lori. Thank you.
Give us an overview of, where Rapid City has been this winter with some of the deaths that the police department has responded to. And then let's talk about, what's already in place for solutions before we get up to, what's the nature of a pop-up shelter. So let's start with a little background for how this winter has fared, how the homeless population has fared with it.
Sure. So unfortunately, we have had four homeless individuals die of exposure due to cold weather. The first one occurred on Christmas morning, and then sometime in early January, we had the second one. And then a week ago, Sunday, is when we found Connie and Ernie deceased under a bridge. Current resources, I'll just tell you, our police officers, by the nature of the work that we do, we become the 24/7 caretakers of our homeless population. And we are doing everything we can to keep a good eye out for people's basic public safety. And we do have the primary resources that we work with for sheltering is the Cornerstone Rescue Mission, which I will just tell you, they are an extremely compassionate organization that has been established for decades here in Rapid City. They do a wonderful job. And then also our Pennington County Alcohol and Drug Program has a detox component with safe beds involved in that as well. So that, I just want to say, is an impressive operation that is working behind the scenes in very humble ways, day in, day out. And I just want to take an opportunity to give a shout out to the staff there because they work with some very challenging conditions, but they treat people with a high degree of compassion, and most importantly, they are ensuring safety, public safety, when they're doing so.
All right, so what's the role of a police officer in Rapid City as the temperature drops and those temperatures become, dangerous, and they encounter someone tells an officer about an individual that's out in the cold, or they encounter someone. What's their role? What do they do?
You know, we get a lot of calls for somebody that's intoxicated in our downtown or Greenway area, but also we're doing proactive patrols, especially when cold weather is coming. And so when we find an individual that appears, let's say they're huddled under a bridge, we engage them, we assess them, we offer resources, we encourage sheltering. And if we believe that they're in a condition that they aren't able to care for themselves, then we can intervene and take them against their will to detox, which happens multiple times a day, every day in Rapid City. But when there's cold weather out and about, we definitely spend additional time and energy on focusing on those areas that we know that the homeless congregate in.
Thanks for the background. Let's talk now about what a pop-up shelter is and how we're seeing, citizens in Rapid City try to be part of the solution of helping people.
Well, so in January, or maybe even the end of December, a group of well-meaning individuals started a practice where they would seek a church basement or another similar location, and they would ask that they could open up a temporary shelter just for overnight. And then they would go out into the community and somewhat round up individuals that they felt would be willing to come to their location. They would feed them, keep them warm, and then they would send them out the next morning. And so my understanding is this occurred possibly five nights from late December to present, and really where it got when it became clear that we needed to intervene on their practices for public safety purposes, it was prior to Connie passing away and Ernie. And so I had a meeting with four very well-meaning ladies that have been kind of leading this effort, and I pointed out the public safety concerns and how that this could really be doing more harm than good. And I asked that they redirect their energy, because again, their energy is needed in our community. But I asked that they redirect it to establish resources that are already operating in the community, and you know, that they consider serving in a very humble way. And sometimes, you know, you might, for example, the Salvation Army, they need volunteers. The Cornerstone Rescue Mission, Boys Club, Girls Inc., all of our nonprofits, they can use additional volunteer help. But it's kind of behind-the-scenes work. You don't get to see the direct result. But it's important because they're operating in a safe and effective manner in the mission that they're trying to accomplish.
What do you think is ineffective about, you know, providing a meal and a place to, you know, to get warm for a while? What's ineffective about a warming center or a pop-up warming center?
Well, you have to have appropriate resources and safety practices in place to manage a facility such as that. And so we had concerns regarding, you know, weapons being brought into facilities, alcohol, cohabitating men and women in the same areas, and that the kind of behavior issues that result when people are intoxicated. We've got quite a bit of experience in dealing with this, and we, you know, understand some best practices. So really specifically, on a Friday night, just a Friday a week ago, a shelter occurred at a church basement in downtown Rapid City, and Connie was there. But there was a disorderly environment that occurred throughout the night. Alcohol was snuck into the shelter. Clients were allowed to go outside to smoke, and somebody had a bottle of vodka, a jug, a large bottle, and it was smuggled back into the shelter with the water bottles that were distributed. So we had a couple of calls for service there that night. We helped mitigate some of the behavior issues. We helped remove a couple of the people, but it sounded like the report that I had was that the volunteers were frustrated early in the morning, and they actually shut down the shelter earlier than they normally would have anticipated to do so. They decided not to host a shelter the following night. And sadly, they sent Connie out into the cold in the morning, and she was not well rested. And the next morning, our officers had the responsibility to recover her body and conduct a death investigation along with that of her significant other, Ernie. This is a couple that they're in their 50s. They are chronically homeless and regularly intoxicated. And I think that the sheltering concept provided them a false sense of security, and it removed any need for self-accountability. You know, the current systems that are in place, they rely on the individual to be a part of the solution and to take steps to secure their own safety. And so it's a false sense of security, and it was careless that they let somebody go out into the cold, unrested, and we had tragic results. I just cannot sugarcoat it. It was a terrible situation.
This is a difficult conversation, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, some of the responses to, you know, your point of view online, and as people write into the Rapid City Journal, for example, and really grapple with how challenging this conversation is, because the problem itself is challenging. And you've said, you know, I'm not going to shy away from this difficult conversation. It's something that we need to talk about very openly and very directly. What has been your response to, you know, the folks who've said, look, we're trying to help, and we're human beings. We're going to open the door to a church. It's just what we're going to do. And they don't necessarily see what you're saying about best practices because they want to do what they can. You know, what's been your response to that as you sort of seen some of the responses?
Well, I would say I welcome the conversations that we're having. I think that we've had some civil discourse that has been healthy for our community. Obviously, the needs are exceeding the resources, so we need to find a way to work towards resolution here. But unfortunately, with a few of the individuals that are leading this effort, the civil discourse has actually carried over to what I would consider civil disobedience. I mean, it's a very low-level civil disobedience, but having a savior mentality and thinking that you can come in and disregard public safety input and that you can do it better than systems that are already in place, it's tragic. I mean, it's heartfelt. It's extreme compassion. But unfortunately, the compassion is coming at the expense of somebody else's public safety. So at the end of the day, I just think it's very clear that we need to get back to collaboration. There's a lot of energy going on in Rapid City in a positive way to come up with better solutions with a collaborative approach. And collaboration requires that, you know, you compromise, that you concede. And sometimes it requires that you serve in a very humble way. And I think we're on the verge of improving public safety in a radically compassionate way, but it's going to be a collective effort. It's not going to be one individual group coming in and quickly fixing the problem.
Was there room, when it gets very cold in Rapid City at the Cornerstone or at the Detox Center? Is that part of the problem, that those places are overwhelmed?
You know, that's part of the debate, and what I would say a false narrative that exists out there is that Detox is full and the Cornerstone Rescue Mission is full. You know, that is correct. At times they are full, but I will tell you that they will work with us in public safety and will always work to find a solution. We will not turn somebody away into the cold. You know, for example, our detox program, what they will do in conditions where they're full is they will basically do a triage effort internally in the facility, and they will find somebody that it has detoxified to some degree and has a safer location to go to, and they'll do what we call one for one. We bring the currently intoxicated person in who's in crisis, and then we take the person who has sobered up to some degree to another safe location, whether it be the Cornerstone Rescue Mission or maybe a friend or family member's place. So our resources are being pushed to the limits. But like I said, we're on the horizon for a major expansion for our detox facility. It's under construction right across the street from the public safety building. It's going to allow for a lot more capacity. And so in the interim, we are, you know, I appreciate people that want to help. And I know there are many people that are wondering how they can. And I would direct them to consider serving, whether it's volunteer time or financial donations, our current resources, the Hope Center, the Cornerstone Rescue Mission, and even if you wanted to volunteer time at Detox. That doesn't really occur. There's not a lot of people lining up wanting to take on that tough duty, but I think we could make that happen.
Carl Jagaris is Chief of Police for the City of Rapid City. Thank you so much, Chief, for being here with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lori.